people from the union, which is a common tactic that these corporations often try to do. They try to third party the union, make workers feel as though it's something that they're not a part of, they're not responsible for. And so I think a lot of things kind of aligned in our case that we were able to be victorious when it's clearly really a struggle to organize and unionize these warehouses.
We just have 10 seconds. Why did you decide to affiliate with Teamsters?
It's national organizing is too much for an independent union to do by ourselves. And if we want to have a chance of taking Amazon to the table, creating that pressure, there has to be national organizing.
I want to thank you both for being with us. The film opens this week.
This Wednesday at IFC Center in New York City and then across the country.
Steve Mang is co-director of Union. Connor Spence is president of the Amazon Labor Union, IBT Local 1. Again, happy birthday to Juan Gonzalez. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now!
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio is now on Venmo. Follow us and send a donation anytime at KBOO Radio. That's at KBOO Radio. Thanks.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, today is the last day for Oregonians to register to vote. Portland looks to sell its historic train station, and Native communities celebrate Indigenous Peoples Day. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, October 15th, 2024. I'm Eric Leuschner. Today is the last day for Oregonians to register to vote. The deadline is at 11:59 p.m. tonight. Voters can check their registration online at oregonvotes.gov/myvote. Oregonians will vote for president, federal, and statewide offices. They'll also weigh in on local races and ballot measures. Portlanders will vote on their new form of government through ranked choice voting, and the whole state will decide on a measure to bring that method to other races, too. Counties will begin mailing ballots on Wednesday. Portland mayoral candidate Keith Wilson was bit by a dog while campaigning in southeast Portland this weekend. He told the Oregonian that four dogs popped out from behind a screen door, and he started walking back as they were barking at him. The owner yelled to the dogs to stop, and three of them obeyed. The fourth bit him on his arm, right above the elbow. Wilson moved to the next house, but soon realized he needed to go to ER. Wilson got 10 stitches. He joked to the Oregonian, quote, "They always told me politics was a blood sport, but this kind of takes it to another level." The EPA is accepting public comments on a proposed vinyl chloride ban until October 23rd. Advocates say the chemical, commonly used to make plastic and PVC products, has been known for decades to be a potent carcinogen. Nadia Romligan has more on the story.
The EPA began an in-depth review of the health risks of vinyl chloride last year, part of a process required to limit or ban the chemical. Jess Kennard with the advocacy group Beyond Plastics says communities in places like East Palestine, Ohio, and West Virginia along the Ohio River experienced widespread harm after train derailments and leaks of the chemical. She believes the heightened public awareness of the dangers of vinyl chloride prompted federal action.
We have safe alternatives for all the consumer products on the market, and I think that the EPA is starting to recognize this. So I do commend the EPA for starting the process, which is the first legal step that could lead to a complete and total ban.
The EPA is accepting public comments on the ban until October 23rd. Vinyl chloride is used to create PVC pipes, vinyl siding, windows, flooring, packaging, and many common household products. Research has shown exposure comes with an increased risk of liver, brain, and lung cancers, along with lymphoma and leukemia. For decades, the Charleston area, home to many industries that produced vinyl chloride and other industrial chemicals, was known as Chemical Valley. Kennard says rather than an outright ban, the EPA is more likely to phase out the chemical and phase in more sustainable alternatives for companies and consumers.
We know that pipes, for example, are a big problem right now because of evidence that indicates that there is leaching of these plastic chemicals into the water that the pipes are carrying.
A 2024 report by Toxic Free Future estimates more than 3 million Americans live within 1 mile of trains carrying vinyl chloride, and that 36 million pounds of the chemical may be traveling along rail lines at any given time in the U.S. This is Nadia Romlagan for West Virginia News Service.
A $250 million renovation at Union Station is on hold, while Prosper Portland, the economic development agency that owns the property, tries to sell it. They want the buyer to carry out the fixes. Amtrak, the National Passenger Railroad Company, which uses the station regularly, seemed to be the most logical choice, but talks with the company stalled earlier this year, according to Prosper. Prosper has actually owned the station since 1987, and the agency has made improvements, seismic upgrades, and a roof replacement. But recent estimates show the facility, built in 1896, needs at least $250 million more to update platforms, tracks, and unreinforced building masonry. Proposed building upgrades also include accessible features for visitors with disabilities, redesigned spaces for passengers and employees, and new electrical, plumbing, mechanical, and safety systems. An agency spokesman actually said earlier that its buildings could fail in an earthquake. Prosper had been unable to secure recent funding for the improvements. In fact, Prosper project manager Shelley Hack told state and federal officials last summer, quote, "We have concluded that it is in the city of Portland's and the station's best long-term interest to align ownership of this asset with an entity with a transportation mission." As a result, Prosper has begun to explore the sale of the station and does not anticipate taking any further actions to pursue the renovation plans, end quote. Hack then reiterated the message this year, noting that efforts to sell the station were still in play. Amtrak is the station's most prominent tenant, possessing more than 40,000 square feet. It emerged as the only candidate to buy the facility, and it was interested, according to Prosper spokesman Sean Ullman. However, Prosper more recently said, quote, "Those conversations have been put on pause due to changes in Amtrak's federal funding, staff capacity, uncertainty about preservation costs, and other organization priorities," end quote. Negotiations apparently mostly revolved around the $250 million in renovation costs, and an actual purchase price was never set. Amtrak also confirmed it has stepped back from discussions. Prosper is not currently widely advertising the property for sale. It also has not hired a real estate brokerage or placed any advertisements. Prosper seems willing to work with Amtrak, the Oregon Department of Transportation, and other state and federal officials looking for an entity with a strong regional transportation mission. In comparison, Seattle's King Street Station, a 1906 facility, completed a restoration about 10 years ago that included rehabbing the station's 12-story clock tower envisioned by Portland architecture firm ZGF. Ullman said, quote, "Prosper Portland is not positioned to lead this work," end quote. Custodians in Washington state keep schools running but often suffer from understaffing. A report found state funding for school staff has increased in recent years, but not as much as other costs. Eric Tegedoff has more.
Custodians are often the unseen workers who ensure school buildings operate. But in Washington state, understaffing can make their work difficult. Custodians run a gamut of tasks in schools, from cleaning to maintenance. Amanda Scholl is head custodian at Kent Lake High School and a member of the American Federation of Teachers Kent Classified. She says when there isn't enough staff, they have to pick up more tasks during the day.
I have to say that all the time. We are understaffed. Somebody called out today and we weren't sent any help. So it greatly affects us because receiving that extra task determines the rest of our day.
A report from the League of Education Voters found Washington state lawmakers are struggling to properly fund the state's 295 school districts. While the state has increased spending on staff, the costs for other items like food, repairs, and natural gas have gone up at an even faster rate since the start of the pandemic. Scholl says her staff often works out of sight of the rest of the people at the school.
People see me, but you never see the real ones that come after the school is out, after the events are over. The quiet ones that clean up and make everything presentable for the next day so classes can happen.
She says the lack of proper funding affects custodians in other ways, such as with equipment shortages. But she says she always tells her team when a teacher or student offers appreciation for their work. For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Homeland Security Secretary Mayorkas warns about false claims affecting FEMA's hurricane relief. Vice President Harris prepares for a Fox News interview. And local Democrats want more election funds in key states. With more on the story, it's Farah Siddiqui with 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
We have individuals in need of assistance, who are entitled to assistance, who aren't seeking it because of the false information.
United States Secretary of Homeland Security Alejandro Mayorkas warns about misinformation in the wake of Hurricane Helene. False claims include that FEMA will seize land from disaster-stricken communities, and a North Carolina man was just arrested for threatening FEMA workers. Former President Donald Trump is alleging that Vice President Kamala Harris is directing FEMA funds to illegal immigrants. FEMA Administrator Deanne Criswell calls that categorically false and says conspiracy theories won't stop them from doing their job.
It doesn't deter us. We know what our mission is.
At a checkpoint outside a Trump rally in Coachella, California, a man who later described himself as a Trump supporter was arrested carrying multiple weapons. The accused, who has been tentatively described by NPR as a follower of the far-right Sovereign Citizen Movement, denies he was going to make a third Trump assassination attempt. In his speech there, Trump sparked controversy by encouraging violence against a heckler.
Back home to mommy. She goes back home to mommy. Was that you, darling? And then she gets the hell knocked out of her. Her mother's a big fan of ours, you know that, right? Her father, her mother.
Harris will sit down for a first interview with Fox News Wednesday. 60 Minutes recently asked her about Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's cooperation with the Biden administration.
We are not going to stop pursuing what is necessary for the United States to be clear about where we stand on the need for this war to end.
Trump called this 60 Minutes interview election interference, citing a promotional video he says showed a different, more vague response about Israel than what actually aired. The Republican vice presidential nominee is still refusing to say Trump lost in 2020, an issue that came up in the VP debate. When asked directly and repeatedly by the New York Times, Ohio Senator J.D. Vance would not say President Joe Biden won the last election. Ohio voters will soon decide on State Issue 1, a proposal to create a 15-member citizen commission aimed at making the drawing of district maps less partisan. But opponents object to ballot language approved by the Republican-controlled state Supreme Court that suggests it would get rid of gerrymandering. Republican Governor Mike DeWine opposes the measure.
State Issue 1 sounds great, but it is the ultimate in gerrymandering. I think people are sick of having politics part of it. State Issue 1 demands that politics be included in this. It's not right.
3 weeks from Election Day, local Democrats in the key states are warning that they need more money. Strong fundraising at the top of the ticket has allowed the party to send some money down ballot, but some say not enough. Democratic committees working on the ground say they still need $20 million more for ads and outreach in crucial states like Michigan, Minnesota, and Pennsylvania. I'm Farah Siddiqui for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Coast Range Radio. At 6 o'clock, it's Transpositive PDX. Then at 7, Radio Zine. On this episode, KBOO takes a listen into a Portland-Gaza rally on October 5th. Tonight's weather will be cloudy with an overnight low of 56 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be rainy with a high of 63. Today in history, in 1989, Wayne Gretzky becomes the all-time leading point scorer in the National Hockey League. The quote of the day is from John Kenneth Galbraith, a Canadian-American economist. He said, quote, "Money is a singular thing. It ranks with love as man's greatest source of joy and with death as his greatest source of anxiety. Over all history, it has oppressed nearly all people in one of two ways. Either it has been abundant and very unreliable, or reliable and very scarce. Native American communities celebrated Indigenous Peoples Day yesterday, including at the University of Oregon. With that story and more, it's Brian Bull with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. Native American organizations and communities celebrated Indigenous Peoples Day Monday. This included an event held at the University of Oregon campus. A quick disclaimer, I'm a faculty member there. Members of the Native American Student Union spoke on a number of important issues, including the missing and murdered Indigenous people crisis, the land back movement, and the dark legacy of explorer Christopher Columbus. The Italian American community had promoted Columbus as the discoverer of America following acts of violence against them in the early 20th century. Anti-immigrant sentiment, including a mass lynching in Louisiana, prompted many to highlight Columbus as a positive figure. But over the past few decades, Native American critics pointed to Columbus's cruel treatment and exploitation of indigenous people as a good reason not to celebrate his role in history. Among those at the UO event was Tira Garrity, a member of the Confederated Tribes of the Chehalis Reservation.
Columbus Day really presents a settler colonial narrative that is intent on destroying indigenous identities and instead assimilating us to Western culture, especially on college campuses, inherently Western institutions that aren't conducive to traditional indigenous ways of knowledge.
Garrity says it's important for Native students to find a sense of community, especially those who are far from home.
The joy that I find from community is my found cousins. I think that everybody that is a part of NASU, everybody that is related to the Longhouse, is like a cousin. They're like family.
Garrity was dressed for the event. She described her handcrafted garments.
I actually made this ribbon skirt myself for the Mother's Day powwow, I think, last year, trying to calm down and make ribbon skirts so the UO Native person's Christmas. So, and this basket I actually got from one of my aunts. We're really like an arts-centric family for Indigenous Peoples Day. It's more than appropriate to be not only representing my tribe, but also my family here.
Jason Yonker also attended. He's the Coquille Tribe's chief and UO presidential advisor on sovereign government-to-government relations. He says this is the 10th year there's been a ceremony to replace the tribal flags on campus.
It's a statement of the tribes and their confidence in the university, but also a reminder that this is Kalapuya land and indigenous peoples were here before the university.
Yonker says besides the Longhouse, Native American students are also shown the 9 tribal flags in the UO amphitheater to promote a sense of community and belonging. The professional indoor football team, Colorado Spartans, have announced plans to play in Denver for the 2025 season. The team's owner, Tony Thompson, is half Yankton Sioux and half Black, and wants to leave a lasting legacy on and off the gridiron. Colorado Public Radio's Tony Gorman has more.
Thompson's decision to relocate the team from Loveland, Colorado to the Denver Coliseum wasn't motivated by money, but by community outreach. The former South Dakota State football player and business owner wanted to offer affordable advertising opportunities to small business owners. Legacy also drives Thompson, who grew up on a reservation in South Dakota. He flies the Yankton Sioux tribal flag at games to honor his family back home.
My grandma, my ancestors, all that, you know, that's home for me. So I give love back to them because not a lot of people make it out of the res. And so I don't know, I'd not say I'm inspiration, but I hope that they can see that, hey, we could do something.
Thompson is offering affordable family ticket packages for the upcoming season. He says the team also plans to be involved with youth sports once it moves to Denver. For National Native News, I'm Tony Gorman in Denver.
And this is Brian Bull for National Native News, hosting from KLCC in Eugene, Oregon.
The top concerns among rural voters across the nation are the economy's impact on workers, threats to democracy, and abortion, according to a new Rural Democracy Initiative poll. a poll saw Donald Trump's lead among likely voters drop from 26 to 18 points since a similar poll conducted in March before Harris entered the race. Eric Galatas has more from Colorado.
Rural voters in Colorado and across the U.S. tend to be swing voters and may decide the outcome of this year's presidential election. Their biggest concerns are the economy, threats to democracy, and abortion, according to a new Rural Democracy Initiative poll. Sarah Janes with the initiative says these voters want elected leaders to make lowering costs and increasing wages for working people a priority, not cutting taxes for the rich or deregulating corporations.
They're very focused on working people as kind of the heroes of the economy and concerns that impact working class people. Rural people and small town folks are more likely to be working class. About 70% of rural folks are working class.
71% of rural voters agreed with the statement, "True patriotism is protecting the freedom to live our lives as we choose." Just 23% agreed that patriotism is about preserving a traditional way of life. The poll was conducted between August 28th and September 8th in 10 battleground states. Nearly 8 in 10 rural voters are firmly against banning abortion. Janes notes that's the same number pollsters saw in a similar survey in March.
They either said that they were against abortion themselves, but didn't think that the government should control a woman's choice in the matter, or they just thought that abortion should be legal.
The poll shows Donald Trump with an 18-point lead over Kamala Harris among likely rural voters, but that's down from a 26% lead in March before Harris announced her campaign. Jane says the big takeaway for both major parties should be that rural voters want to see worker-centered policies.
People want to make sure that they have the tools and opportunities to create a good life for themselves and their families, and that shows up in their support for childcare and health care.
This is Eric Galatas for the Colorado News Connection.
As Halloween draws near, the nonprofit Defenders of Wildlife is launching a Real Scary Movies campaign to show how sharks and some other animals with fierce reputations are misunderstood and unfairly portrayed as villains. Tramell Gomes has the story.
As Halloween approaches, a spooky campaign aims to clear up the common misunderstandings about some of nature's most feared creatures. In collaboration with other organizations, Defenders of Wildlife is launching its Real Scary Movies campaign to highlight how animals, often vilified in horror stories like sharks, bats, and wolves, are vital to the health of their ecosystems. Jane Davenport with Defenders of Wildlife hopes to dispel these myths, many of which she says have been fueled by Hollywood blockbusters like the 1975 movie Jaws.
Obviously, a shark attack on a human is a terrifying and unfortunately sometimes tragic event. There's only about 70 unprovoked shark attacks on people every year all around the world. But on the other hand, humans are killing northwards of 80 million sharks every year.
Davenport believes the shark's frightening reputation has contributed to a lack of focus on their preservation, leading some species toward extinction. The shark fishing industry defends its practices by claiming U.S. shark fisheries are among the most sustainable, with laws that prevent overfishing and enhance economic value. The campaign urges the public to make more sustainable choices of seafood and consumer products, and to look beyond the scary imagery, even if it's just for Halloween fun. For Davenport, the public should recognize that the real spooky and scary story is how human activities pose a significant threat to wildlife.
Species like sharks and bats and wolves are not out there trying to do anything other than live their lives. And so we really need to bring awareness and do some myth busting to try to dispel the image that these are creepy, scary creatures.
In the spirit of the season, the campaign will put a unique twist on popular scary movies to highlight the harmful impacts of issues like bycatch, when non-target marine animals are inadvertently hooked or netted by fishermen targeting other species. It's a different perspective to consider while binging the Jaws series. This is Tramell Gomes for Florida News Connection.
China's economic slowdown may mean the economy has peaked. Real estate and youth unemployment are key problems that require the leadership's attention, but so far, its stimulus package looks inadequate. As one observer notes, more trouble may lie ahead. Now we go to Global Citizen commentary on the issue from Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. The opinions expressed in the following piece are those of the speaker.
Hello, everyone. One of the most important developments in the international economy is that China's economy has probably peaked in size and performance. The era of investment and credit expansion seems to be over. Factory output has slowed, unemployment has risen, the stock market has reeled. China's share of the world economy has dropped. It peaked at 18.3% of global GDP in 2021 and dropped to 16.9% in 2023. That compares with the U.S. economy, which has averaged 26% of the world economy during all those years. Several key indicators that show that China's economic weakening is structural rather than cyclical are its declining workforce population, youth unemployment, credit and investment drop-offs, failures in real estate and infrastructure, and the flight of multinational corporations to more accommodating locations. All these problems suggest the need for significant reforms, but there is no sign that the leadership accepts the idea of peaking and is prepared to put major funds into propping up the weak sectors, starting with consumer spending. Economists outside China say it would take at least $1 trillion to make a difference. But China's priority seems to be major investments in those high-tech sectors that compete with the West, namely electric vehicles, renewable energy, and semiconductors. Let's take a closer look at two sectors that present major problems, real estate and youth unemployment. The real estate market is the elephant in the room, according to a senior Chinese economist. Real estate once comprised 30% of China's GDP and 80% of household wealth. The economist says demand from China's consumers is there, but they don't want to buy property because of the risk the homes cannot be delivered. Apartments in China have typically been sold ahead of completion. Some 20 million pre-sold apartment units remain unfinished, according to one outside economic source. Home buyers of one such project told CNBC recently they had been waiting for 8 years to get their homes. If the Chinese leadership were serious about helping consumers, it might bail out these unhappy property owners and take steps to stabilize the real estate market. China's central bank did respond last month by making loans easier to obtain and cutting interest rates on existing mortgages. Commercial banks were told they could lend a good deal more money to companies and households. But whether those steps will be enough to kickstart the economy remains to be seen, since the Chinese are savers, not spenders. Here's a local example of the problem. Xinhua, China's official news agency, reports that, quote, Shanghai will allocate 500 million yuan from its municipal budget to issue consumption vouchers for the dining, accommodation, cinema, and sports sectors. Well, when you divide that amount among the city's 25 million plus population, each Shanghaiese will actually get a few dollars to spend, hardly the sort of allocation likely to propel consumption. Youth unemployment is not just a serious economic problem, it can also lead to political protest. It comes at a time when the population is fast aging and the workforce actually needs more bodies, in part so that enough people pay into the pension system to keep it viable. The government's decision in late 2024 to raise the retirement age will help keep the pension system afloat, but it will also mean that young working people will have to work longer to get to pension age. For them, the pension reform is bad news, a disincentive to work and save unless the government also provides higher quality jobs, job security, and more opportunities for women. Many observers therefore predict that the Chinese economy will continue to struggle, notwithstanding a jump in stock market and property sales when the government first announced a stimulus package about a week and a half ago. A Wall Street Journal writer reports, quote, without more forceful stimulus directed toward boosting spending instead of expanding supply, the risk, economists say, is that China slips into a damaging period of falling prices and subdued growth similar to Japan's decades-long stagnation or the painful debt workouts that followed past real estate crises in Europe and the United States. The only bright spot, said the report, is exports, which rose 8.7% year over year in August, easily outpacing imports. But even that bright spot has problems because China is viewed, especially in the US, Europe, and India, as exporting overcapacity in manufacturing that is resulting in undercutting prices in those countries. Thus, we find strong resistance to Chinese electric vehicles in Europe and major tariff increases on Chinese goods in the US and India to make local prices more competitive. The larger point here is that in the minds of China's leadership, peak China directly affects economic stability, which is central to political stability and therefore to national security. I'm Mel Gertal for the Global Citizen. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, October 15, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Josh Salem and Mel Gertov. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Eric Tegadoff, Brian Bull, Faraz Siddiqui, Mike Moen, Tramel Gomes, Eric Galatas, and Danielle Smith. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eric Leuschner. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321. Stay tuned now for Coast Range Radio.
From the Coast Range Association, this is Coast Range Radio. I'm Michael Gaskill. Oregon Rural Action and Food and Water Watch recently conducted a rare flyover of Three Mile Canyon Farms, one of Oregon's most notorious factory cattle farms, also known by the simultaneously anodyne and somehow horrifying technical name, a confined animal feeding operation, or CAFO, out in Morrow County. So in conjunction with that, both organizations have released detailed, interactive maps highlighting the extent of factory farms and associated pollution in Oregon. These maps and the accompanying reports show that factory farms are a